Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Whoop, the personalized digital fitness and health coach. John John and Nathan Florence have both been using Whoop for over 3 years now to balance their training both in and out of the water. Now, Whoop is introducing the all-new Whoop 4.0, the latest, most advanced fitness wearable on the market. Monitor your recovery, sleep, training, and health with personalized recommendations and coaching feedback with Whoop. Train smarter, recover faster, sleep better, and now feel healthier with Whoop. The all-new 4.0 is smaller, smarter, and designed with new biometric tracking, including skin temperature, blood oxygen, and more. The device also features an all-new smart alarm designed to wake you up feeling refreshed and ready to take on the day. Plus, it was designed with their new Anywhere technology, so you can wear it with their Whoop body sensor-enhanced garments. The all-new Health Monitor dashboard gives you a big-picture overall look at health. Monitor key metrics like heart rate, resting heart rate variability, skin temperature, and blood oxygen levels. Plus, see improvements and irregularities in vital signs over time. You can even export 30-day health trends to share with your coach, trainer, PT, PCP, or physician. The all-new waterproof device is free when you design up for a Whoop 4.0 membership. For any members, if you have 6 months left of membership on your account, you can upgrade now and get the 4.0 for free. And right now, Whoop is offering 15% off when you use the code BEACHGRIT at checkout. Go to Whoop, WHOOP.com and enter BEACHGRIT at checkout to save 15%.
Hello and welcome to Dirty Water, episode 43. More fun, we hope, than 6 weeks of 16-hour shifts on the fast track. I'm Derek Riley. I'm with Charlie Smith. And today's guest brought hell to a longboard event 5 months ago when she called out the contest organizers from the stage for paying the women half as much as the men. The effect was seismic and mainstream media went into overdrive. For who, after all, doesn't love a little patriarchy busting? Is there no crime greater or more deserving than a little public vengeance? Organisers of the event pledged to do better, saying they hadn't really thought about it, and GSI Surfboards quickly jumped in to fill the gap in prize money. 2 weeks ago, our guest went head-to-head with the founder of professional surfing, Mr. Ian Cairns, via Instagram DMs after she posted a meme featuring the hanging scene from the Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Kanga took it as a personal affront, white man being executed. Our guest did it to highlight the hypocrisy of an amendment to Texan abortion laws. Our guest, Australia's Lucy Small.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. That was great, Derek. Thank you.
It's a pleasure. Lucy, so first, how about you take us back to what was, before you got on stage, a pretty inconsequential longboarding event. So paint us a picture. When did you realise you were getting stiffed for the cash?
Curly Mail Jam is an event that I guess it's like sort of part of the Australian amateur longboard circuit. There's like a few different events throughout the year around Australia that are kind of like the longboard board rider club events that it's like their annual contest. A lot of them don't normally have prize money, and the Curly Mail Jam is probably probably the richest like prize purse at that level. So I was a late entry into the event. Someone pulled out, and on reflection, I really think they must have regretted giving me that spot. But So I knew what the women's prize money was, but I didn't know that it was unequal before I entered. And the actual day of the event, the waves were crap. North Curly is like basically a shorey. It was just breaking like fat out the back and then a big gully and then right onto the sand. So before I paddled out, I was kind of like, this looks kind of hectic. And it's actually a like a high performance longboard event. So before the contest, I know like a few of the other people who were in it had like gotten their old HPs out, dug them out from under the house to just to surf that event. And I was like, oh, I'm just gonna surf my log. Like I don't even know how to surf a HP. So I had like a 9.6 single fin with a super wide tail, like basically the opposite of what you need in those conditions. And paddling out of my first heat, it was kind of better when I got out there than what I thought from the beach. And I just, I don't know, managed to scrape through that heat. Like I didn't really get any good waves. I think I got through in second or something. And then the waves started to get a lot better in the afternoon. It did start to clean up, but it was still like basically a shorey. And for the final, yeah, I just like managed to get two good waves and everybody else was just like struggling to get onto these big fat burgers. And I just got like a couple of runners that felt really good. And I was like, you know, when you're in the lead in the heat, you're like willing the time to speed up. And when you're like in a not passing position, you are like willing the time to slow down. And I was just like, come on, I think I'm in the lead. Like they didn't announce the positions or anything. And then, yeah, coming into the beach, I didn't know if I'd won or not, but a few people said like, oh yeah, like you surf really well. I think that you maybe might have won that. And then I was standing with one of the other finalists, Tully White, who is currently in California competing on the Longboard World Tour. Go Tully. And her mom, and we were talking about like, yeah, the final or whatever. And she said, I don't think the prize money's not equal. Last year, Tully only got $750 while the men got $4,000. And I was like, what? That just seems like that doesn't happen anymore. Like surfing has equal prize money, surely. And so then Tully was like, nah, it's definitely unequal. So I went over to where they were setting up the presentation and like had a look at the big novelty checks, moved the stuff over, dug around. And yeah, I saw that the men were getting $4,000 for the winner and I was going to get, or whoever won the women's, was going to get 1500. So myself and Tully and one of the other finalists, we were just standing there going, whoever's won has to say something. And then we were like, maybe we'll just talk to the organizers off to the side. And then when it actually got to the presentation, standing up there and then they like said that I'd won and then yeah, asked me to say something. And I was like, in my head, I was going, don't say it, don't say it, don't say it. And then I was just already saying it. I was like, yeah, I don't know. My voice was shaking. I was super, I don't know, to sort of, someone gives you a $1,500 check and you just look them in the face and say, this is not enough. I guess felt like, I don't know, that was a pretty scary thing to do. It was a pretty intense thing to do, but I knew I had like the support of the other girls up there because we'd kind of talked about how annoyed and sick of it we were. And Tully's mom, Donna, was filming. So I knew that I had a little pocket of support in the crowd, even if no one else was into it. And yeah, at the time I had no idea that it would blow up in the way that it did. Like it was, I thought like probably people in longboarding would like see the video and think like, oh yeah, that's like that, that they had it coming because there's been so many events over the years of unequal prize money. And I know like just a month before there was a contest in Noosa, like similar kind of level that they did have unequal prize money as well. And the winner, she was just kind of like, I saw her a few weeks later and she was like, it's just so like degrading and so over it. And it just feels like there's nothing we can do. Like you just have to take your lesser prize money and just like act like you should be grateful to even have a division in the event. So that was kind of, I didn't really expect that anything would kind of, become the what it has. And like that night after I went home and I was talking to one of my friends and she was like, I wonder if you get any media out of this. And I was like, nah, probably not. Nobody really cares. but yeah, thanks to Chaz kind of putting that out there at the very beginning, and then it got picked up and really, really snowballed into what was like probably one of the most intense periods of my life. so yeah, that was pretty much it.
When you're up there on stage getting your, or I mean, just the idea of unequal prize money to begin with, like, I mean, I don't know why any man is against it as a concept, why it even roils anybody, right? Like, people are doing the same thing, like, whatever, pay them equal, like, there's, it should be a purse. I mean, the U.S. women's soccer team in particular is one that's really gotten me, where for years and years and years and years, they've gotten paid less, but they're the only ones who win the championships, and they've gotten paid tons less. Like, I don't understand how this is even a thing. Like, in your mind, how do you rationalize it being a thing? Like, what is the impetus behind it? What is the meaning for all of this? Why does this exist?
I guess it's sort of about, it's about maintaining control, like one group maintaining control of, or ownership over the domain, over the sporting domain. I don't know if this is like the science behind it, but like, it, I guess historically, sport has been something that men have done. It's like this inequality has gone back for many, many years since the dawn of people playing sport. And it's something that men have done in the public sphere, and something that women have not really done. And you know, like somebody, the first woman to ever run a marathon was 1973. They only had 1500 meters freestyle for women at the Olympics this year for the first time. And this kind of ideas about like what sport means and who should be doing it, I think in a lot of sports, it's like white men have control and ownership over that space, and to expand it out and include different people as equals is to kind of lose that control and lose that power, perceived loss of control and power. But what it actually is doing by keeping the field narrow to like these kind of traditional ideas of what an athlete looks like as a white man, you actually lose out on all of like these bigger markets and these much greater opportunities for expansion and growth that diverse inclusion actually poses. So yeah, I think that is kind of, I think it's not specific to sport, this inequality. Like obviously the gender pay gap still exists more generally. So I think it's symptomatic of wider cultural ideas of the roles and the values that women have within our societies more generally.
I noticed you mentioned that white men a few times. Is it only endemic to white men, or are there some bad black men out there as well, keeping down the women in Africa?
Yeah, totally. But I think, like, I'm not going to I mean, like, in terms of, like, the system of patriarchy is large. The apex predators of the patriarchy is white men as a group, and I'm not saying that as anything against white men personally as individuals, just the system that favors white men. And like sports that are maybe more like ethnically or racially inclusive, like soccer or football, it pose different problems. But when we think about surfing specifically, like it is largely dominated by white men. The narratives around who is a surfer is a blonde, white Californian, this like Californian identity that surfing has, that has been appropriated as the surfer identity, that is like this California, this Californian look or whatever appearance. And it's to do with class as well, the way that we see like people of color not really included in surfing as much. Like, it's gradually changing, but things that are like coastal, like suburbs that are close to the beach are more expensive. So it's going to be more.
So I got to take issue with that expensive suburbs thing, because it never used to be. It's only quite a recent phenomenon, the increase in real estate prices around the beach. Like, Bondo is a shithole. I mean, you could argue it's still a shithole now, but it's an expensive shithole. And Coolangatta was, everyone's on the junk and shit. And it's only recently that they've actually become expensive places. So it always felt like surfing was more of a cultural thing amongst white people. And, you know, Australia and America until quite recently were white majority countries. And that's probably why there's white people. But then you go to Hawaii and there's Hawaiians, go to Bali and there's Indonesians and so on. So, I find the race thing a little bit confusing in the issue of, women's prize money. But white men are scumbags. Don't get me wrong. I fucking hate white men.
I guess I'm just
about the white man.
I guess I'm just trying to explain the kind of ways that people are pushed out of surfing spaces generally to hold white men as the more dominant group within surfing, whether that's gender diversity or racial diversity. There are different reasons why people are pushed out. But... it's changing, and I think that's really good, but it's not there. It's not there yet.
What do you feel about World Surf League 3.0 or whatever it is, Eric Logan regime, the equal prize money there? I mean, how much of it do you feel is performative versus there's an actual drive for equality or for any kind of change?
Well, I'm pretty sure that the head of editorial at WSL described Girls Can't Surf movie as boring, and he didn't make it to the end. So I don't know if...
I can't imagine the WSL saying that. Do they really care? Are you being silly? You're teasing us.
No, he's. I think she's true.
Is it true?
It's true.
Really?
Yeah.
And they published that. Do they really?
Well, yeah, I mean, they were not exactly enthusiastic about it.
Wow.
I think that there are people within the WSL who truly believe in this, but I think a lot of it is like, it has to be the marketing value of it. Like, look at us, we are leading the world in gender equality, but it doesn't necessarily mean that everybody in the organization believes that it's true. Like, I know still issues with the commentary teams and the way that they hire people is like no offense to Kaipo, but what's he doing on that commentary team?
He's wonderful, Kaipo.
Kaipo Guerrero?
Didn't you hear he dated Madonna in 1975?
I can't believe you haven't heard that, Lucy.
I mean, I just...
No, it's Chappelle's and Hamasa diet. That must help, surely.
Huh?
Joe Terpel's and hermaphrodites, surely that must help.
I just think that, I don't know, I guess I don't want to rag on an organization that at least...
Ripping at the cunts, yeah.
Good, but I don't know if the thoroughness of it is there yet, and I feel like they still have a way to go.
Did you feel like... I mean, would you describe yourself as an activist? Did the moment on stage make you an activist, or were you, or do you not see your, I mean, how do you see yourself vis-a-vis, like, I suppose, just broader labels of feminist, activist, whatever, right? Like,
before that equal prize money thing, I was just like, I don't know, a pleb living in Sydney, just trying to go surfing. And then... after that, I became a pro surfer and an activist. I guess I'm an activist now because I have gone on to start a campaign and lead a campaign that makes me an activist. But I've always been a feminist, but I never really had done so too much about it until...
Describe your feminist... what your like history as a feminist? I mean, what turned you on? Like, who was the first, I don't know, author or thinker or film or something that made you think, wait a second, or was it your mom or grandma, or what was the moment that really spiked it all?
So I don't know if there was a clear moment, but, and it, I just assume it must have been my mom, but like the very first feminist thing I did, I think, was when I was like 12 and I was in Scouts, and I don't know, and we had the first, I was in the first ever all girls patrol, and we won our like regional camping competition to the first all girls patrol to ever do that. So I think that was my first feminist move. I didn't really know, I grew up very regional, like in a quite a rural area, so I didn't have a lot of exposure to anything that really let me understand or learn about feminism as I was a kid. That was just something that I learned when I was older.
Hey, Chaz, can I just jump in here?
No, you hit it, Derek.
Do you have a favorite feminist manifesto? Because mine is Scum, you know, Valerie Solanas's, you know, masterwork from the 60s.
The opening paragraph of it is like, the world is not being designed for women. It's too boring. We need to eliminate all men. And and we just need to have a society without men. And she tried to kill, what's his name? Andy Warhol.
Yeah, Society for Cutting Up Men. Can I read my favorite two extracts? They're very short. Yeah. Well, they're not very short. They're quite long. But can I read them? Because they're really good.
Yeah, good.
Because we all hate men. The male is completely egocentric, trapped inside himself, incapable of empathizing or identifying with others, love, friendship, affection, or tenderness. He is a completely isolated unit and capable of rapport with anyone. His responses are entirely visceral, not cerebral. His intelligence is a mere tool in the services of his drives and needs. He is incapable of mental passion, mental interaction. He can't relate to anything other than his own physical sensations. He's a half-dead, unresponsive lump incapable of giving or receiving pleasure or happiness. Consequently, he is at best an utter bore, an inoffensive blob, since only those capable of absorption in others can be charming. He is trapped in a twilight zone halfway between humans and apes, and is worse off than the apes because, unlike the apes, he is capable of a large array of negative feelings: hate, jealousy, contempt, disgust, guilt, shame, doubt. And moreover, he is aware of what he is and what he isn't. Eaten up with guilt, shame, fears, insecurities, and obtaining, if he's lucky, a barely perceptible physical feeling, the male is nonetheless obsessed with screwing. He'll swim through a river of a snot, wade nostril deep through a mile of vomit if he thinks there'll be a friendly pussy awaiting him. He'll screw a woman he despises, any snaggle-toothed hag, and furthermore, pay for the opportunity. Why? Relieving physical tension isn't the answer, as masturbation suffices for that. It's not ego satisfaction. That doesn't explain screwing corpses and babies. Amazing, huh? Men are such pieces of shit. Chaz, except for you and my boy.
I mean, that is a beautiful piece of writing right there.
Beach grit.
Yeah.
It's Valerie. Oh, she did. It.
Yeah, I have to say, when I found out about that, the Scum Manifesto, Society for Cutting Up Men, I really found it hilarious to read. And although I feel like at the moment that kind of feminism is not exactly useful, it's very nice to read the kind of fire of the people in history who have been brave enough and not had any sense to feel like they need to be liked, and they're just like willing to put their views and express themselves so rawly out there. I think that's a really, the history and the legacy of feminism is very interesting, and it's very entertaining.
Are you a Pussy Riot fan?
A what fan?
Pussy Riot.
What's Pussy Riot again? I don't know.
The Russians, the Ruskies, who like rock in a church, and like Vladimir Putin keeps arresting them, and they just like keep shredding all over the place. They're so good.
That's cool. Yeah, I think that's the cool thing about the feminist movement. It comes in many different forms. There's many different feminist movements, and we need them all in different ways. There's some people just with petitions and Instagram squares, and there's some people out there friggin' doing it old school, which is sick.
So now that you are an activist, though, like what, I mean, painting, like, I don't know, you know, I have two daughters, right? Like, I'm in this game. Derek's a father of sons. Derek is exactly.
Yeah, daughter too.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
I'm there. Brother. I'm there.
Why did I forget Shawnee? Sorry, Shawnee. Derek is a beautiful man and also a father of a daughter. But like wanting them to be inspired, right? And I don't know, seeing as they move through the world, like how do you paint your ideal vision of both what you want to do and how you want it to look?
In terms of like for me as somebody that daughters can look towards, as do you mean?
Sort of. I mean, now you're a leader, Lucy. You are a leader whether you want to be or not.
Little girls looking up to you.
Yeah, I have to say one of the most heartwarming parts of just accidentally becoming a famous feminist is all of the teenage girls that send me messages for their school assignments. And it's really nice, and some of their questions are really hard.
I'm so glad the Beach Grit had even a tiny part in making you do teenage girls' school assignments.
It's like I'm writing an assignment about women's representation in the wider feminist movement in Australia or something, and I'm like having to write all these answers about like who do you think is the leader of the feminist movement, which is really cool. But I guess I haven't really thought about this too much. I think I would hope that any little girl or boy who's out there, or teenage girl or boy who's thinking, who's looking at my Instagram or something, could think that you can just go ahead and do anything. You don't have to be a superstar to do stuff. You can just you can just be a regular gal and then just stick it to the patriarchy and suddenly be part of a movement that you actually had no idea that you could ever be part of. And that a testament to that is to just be brave and to speak your mind. And I really hope that in some way that I can encourage people who are too fearful to speak up against injustice to go, I can do it. I can say something and I can change it. And I hope that that's what is what people think. I don't know.
Do you ever think, okay, I could push this farther. Come on, okay. Like, feminism's great. Love it. Into it. Also, I get friggin' rich here. I could write a bestseller. I could be Australia's number one feminist icon. I could start fires all over the place. I've got my path now. I'm going to run it.
Like, you mean maybe I could start the revolution if I wanted?
That's what I'm talking about. Like, you've got a sweet Joan of Arc haircut going where I feel you could be Australia's Joan of Arc carrying a longboard. Who could have said?
Like, maybe, but I don't really know when I'm going to actually get to go surfing if I do that. It takes a long time.
I think Joan of Arc still got to go riding horses, right? She made it. I mean, I feel you just like mow through lineups, just like chopping.
When we start the revolution, is there going to be a point break there?
I mean, precisely. That's a good question. That is a great question to ask.
I don't know. I haven't. All I've been thinking about lately is trying to get signatures on my petition. I haven't really thought about how to do anything else. I have thought it would be really cool to organize a mini all-girl band festival to like raise awareness for the issue, and that would be a really fun campaign event to do.
You could call it Lilith Fair.
Huh?
You could call it Lilith Fair. Did you ever listen or go to, I mean, you're way too young. You don't even remember Lilith Fair, do you?
My only understanding of anyone called Lilith is like Eve's like feminist naughty sister from Adam and Eve story.
Exactly. They had like in the early Lollapalooza days when that first started, the early grunge movement, they had Lilith Fair, which was the all feminist grunge festival. So it was only women bands just ripping it on stage. Yeah, you can bring it back.
That's kind of what I want to do. Have like a lineup of all girl bands, and then you have to like to get in, you have to sign the petition before you go in.
Done and dusted. Derek?
Aren't girls too weak to play drums?
I think we're gonna have to actually get all boys on drums because girls have sound or something. I don't know.
Yeah, we can open the pick boxes and shit. Can you help me with this? Can you help me with my amp? Hey Lucy, let's dive into the recent explosive online exchange with Kanga, the founder of Pro Surfing, the big wave legend and supporter of women's surfing. I mean, I had a sniff around your Instagram. He's often in your comments talking at women's pro surfing. So what happened to your burgeoning friendship?
Yeah, so first thing was that I was wondering what he actually did do for women's surfing.
He married one.
Hey, he did.
Like, that's cool.
I'll do my bit. I'm married one of the bitches.
Yeah, like, I guess women surfers need support. That's great. Good.
Didn't Kanga actually set up the whole women's division, Derek?
It probably
correct
probably,
me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, and he's really really into it. So, but I don't know.
I was googling him, and it wasn't his lead trait on his Wikipedia profile. So I don't know. Maybe you should get it up there a bit further. So yeah, I mean, he's replied to my story a couple of times when I have posted a few things about COVID vaccinations. And interestingly, he has used the terminology "my body, my choice," which you would know is from the pro-abortion movement. So when I posted a meme that I did not make, that was just out there on the internet, that basically made a comment, it was in response to the Texas abortion law, and it also made a comment about how like about men losing their virginity to of government telling them what to do with their body. And to be honest with you, I just really wondered about the last time that the government made Ian Cairns have a baby when he replied to me saying that he found it offensive that I had posted that. And when he replied saying that I find this offensive, this is people you need to live with, which is his first response, I did think, that's a really weird thing to say, but okay. And I didn't really humor him. And I said, wishing you growth, which is what Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez signs off on her post about this stuff. So I took that directly from her. And I guess it probably is a little bit patronizing, but I also was kind of giving his message the same level of intellect that I thought it deserved. And yeah, he came back with a straight up fuck you, and also made a comment about how much he does for women's surfing and how I needed him. And I really thought maybe you did one thing for women's surfing one time. It does not mean that I still owe you. And I also really wondered what he meant, like that I needed him for, and I really wondered for what. So yeah, then he said, okay, bye. And he unfollowed me. And
Ian.
Wow.
That's not cool.
Blunt force, isn't it?
classic symbolic move, the unfollow. But yeah, I did. I thought that was quite a, it was very mean what he said. Can't say fuck you to someone. I don't know. I thought that was rude.
Derek?
Well, when I asked Ian about it, he said, because I asked him if he had a beef with Lucy, and he said, no beef. I just didn't like a picture of a white guy about to be hung representing the travesty of the Texas abortion law, which I thought was good because it's you both are on the same page on the Texas abortion law thingy. And he said, it offends me thinking that they're of the left and forgiving, but she stepped up with the get enlightened gibberish. And AOC is a red rag to someone like Ian Cairns. And he was saying that if you want equal prize money for winning, you shouldn't offend people who are willing to help.
I think that that's the opposite of what we should do if we want equal prize money. We should be willing to speak up and stop pandering to people who will willingly perpetuate inequality in order to please people. The objective of any movement of creating disruption that will hopefully lead to change is not being afraid to be disliked. You have to be willing to be disliked by people who find your position on things offensive because they maybe haven't done the kind of reflection or gained the kind of understanding that is needed to support the movement authentically, and would rather say fuck you than think, does she need me? Or feel like they're owed by somebody like me. I'm not going to pander to somebody, to anybody, in order to get support, because I think if people genuinely believe and want to support us, then they won't expect that.
Because there's no such thing as a blood-free revolution, as Malcolm X famously said.
I guess so.
Sorry, Ian. That's a bit little blood spilt on the streets, I think.
Like, no offense, Ian, but I think he's dead wood that I'll happily cut.
Oh. But he was pretty keen to achieve a beautiful rapprochement with all of us on a podcast. Why didn't you want to join in that little four-way?
I guess because I was worried that it might be positioning me to have some kind of confrontation with Ian that didn't feel like a productive use of my energy. And also I didn't want to give support the giving platform to somebody who would say something so nasty and feel like they're owed something. So I didn't really feel like that was a comfortable space for me to be in to talk about these kind of issues.
It would have been squishy because he's a big man.
Not to speak or defend Ian, but I mean, he's honestly from a different era, right? Like, he's a different kind of, I don't know. And I suppose these are the things that all ugly white men say is just, forgive him his sins. Like, he's just an old white dude. This is the way they speak. But I think Ian would say that, right? I think Ian would say, I love a dust up. I mean, I've had good dust ups with Ian where he's told me to fuck me too. Ian's given me the fuck you before.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You don't remember that? That's when I first met Ian Cairns. He maybe didn't say fuck you, did he? I can't remember. Is fuck you, do you take super, I mean, I guess I just have heard fuck you so many times in my life that I don't even take offense anymore. Derek, do you?
No.
Just, but it's like, easy for a friend.
By the door and someone tells you to fuck you.
Yeah, I get fuck you. Oh, man, it's like 50-50. Fuck you or go to hell at this point.
Fuck you.
It would be different getting a fuck you from, like, I don't know, somebody who is maybe of my age group, of my gender or something like that, that I could kind of be like, oh, that's just catty. But from a 69-year-old man who's like a life member of the governing body of pro surfing, to me, who's like a 28-year-old woman who's just trying to like do stuff to help society be better, I just feel like that kind of like dynamic there's already like social hierarchies that exist, that then to get that fuck you, I was like, it didn't actually make me upset. It just made me think like it reflects very badly on him, I guess. That's what it does. And I didn't really feel like I wanted to, she just don't really want to talk to somebody that would say something like that to me. I think he is of a different era, and I totally get that point, Chaz. I think that that is important for us to have that understanding that not everybody is learning things at the same pace, or not everybody has this kind of exposure to all this information through social media or whatever that younger generations have now, that lets us kind of rapidly catch on to these social trends and have these open minds and all that kind of thing, that, you know, like doing maybe what Ian did for women's surfing in the late 80s or early 80s when his era was, like, it probably was a big deal then. And I feel like that kind of thing shouldn't go unnoticed, but I do also think it is everybody's responsibility to keep on learning and keep on paying attention to this stuff as best they can. And like, I am of the mindset of forgiveness and bringing people along and that kind of thing, but I'm not going to do that to someone that's going to tell me to get fucked. Like, how am I supposed to do that? So yeah, I guess that, like, I think one of the great things has been my dad. He doesn't surf, but he's a big sports fan, and bringing him along on this journey and him saying now that he's thinking about things so differently, and he's doing he's kind of picking up on the way that he has thought about women or issues to do with women, and the words that he uses that he's never done before. And he said, like, it's never too old. I'm never too old to learn. And he's like, I think my dad's a feminist now.
is like, yeah, I mean, in regards to, I mean, just the idea of being woke or getting woke or all this kind of stuff, right? Like, it is hard. I mean, I think that the assumption is that all of this is self-evident, and that everyone, you know, if you're not getting it instantly, then you're part of the problem. But I think that's a pretty harsh, for me at least, obviously I'm a toxic white male, but like, I just think, wow, like, to expect everyone's going to perceive all of these things in the same way and then understand them in the same way, or to even assume that all of these things are self-evident, right? I think it's hard. Like, and I fully back the bloody revolution, like, burn the fucking house down. But also, I don't know, there was also, you know, there was Malcolm X, and then there was stinking Martin Luther King Jr., right? Who was, there's sort of two different sides to revolution.
I think that, though, when the bloody revolution starts, the movement begins with people going out into communities and educating people, actively talking about the issues and helping people to learn and understand, so that when the revolution starts, everybody who wants to join has had the opportunity to do so. So I think that if we are, I think, yeah, we do need to give people the chance to learn and ask questions and say, like, I don't really, like, to have space for people to say, I didn't realize, how do you think it should be? Or I didn't know that this was an issue, or it's always been this way, but how can we change it? I think is completely fine, and we shouldn't punish people for not having the knowledge. And I think that, like, in what I've noticed from living in the city now, but from sort of always having lived in smaller coastal communities, is my understanding of these issues has grown very quickly from being in an environment where there is a lot of diversity. There are a lot of, like, sort of, there's the marketplace of ideas is a lot bigger, whereas in coastal communities there's not necessarily the same kind of exposure to different people and different social issues and kind of things, work that people are doing. Like, can be a lot more insulated, and so the rate of learning is a lot slower. So if you were going to do something like campaign to change prize money in the whole state, you need to put work into, or like have the kind of approachability to be able to educate people and help people learn and not be punishing people because they didn't know. So, like, I think that is really important, and that we can't just exclude older generations because in their time the knowledge was different, and have the opportunity for people to learn in this time and the way that things are changing now. And I think that everyone can do it. Everybody can be part of it in a positive way. But we do need to take the time to do it. And we can't just expect people to know already, because that, I don't know, it's not fair, I guess.
So you're raising cash for Surf Aid, which is a beautiful not-for-profit, helping the dying multitudes in the mental eyes. Hello to the beautiful Dougie Lees, Claire Stafford. But you did say that you're usually very wary to support Western-based surf charities. What is it about fashionable Western-based charities that kills you?
Okay, I have to be completely honest. I had to pull out of Surf Aid September because I live more than 5 kilometres from the beach, so I couldn't go surfing for the whole of September because of lockdown.
Oh, geez. Couldn't run the gauntlet?
But I did. I just wanted to be thorough in joining that and knowing that the initiatives are locally led, which I think is really awesome, something that Surf Aid seems to do quite well, is that it's funded by Western initiatives like Surf Aid September, people donating here in Australia, but then the actual on the ground work is done and led by people from within the communities that it's done. And I said that because there's complex issues with foreign aid that can have a lot to do with like cultural imperialism, I guess we could say. And ideas of like Western ideas of how society should look being diffused into areas that that are in non-Western through foreign aid. And I think that that's something that only people from within a community know the changes that need to be made. And it's better to support that than it is to come in with foreign ideas and deliver trying to deliver outcomes that suit a Western context but are not necessarily suitable or best for the communities that you are delivering them to.
Like pop stars for Africa. And
exactly.
you wouldn't know this, Lucy, but Do They Know It's Christmas was the biggest faux pas song ever.
Oh, man. Another
country, they didn't know it was Christmas. Of course they didn't. They wanted to kill the infidel. Ah! But
Lucy. Okay, last question here. Beach Grit's readership, I think, is a, you know, I think they're on the surface is a crusty, old, white surfer, right? Like, I can't imagine there's lots of, I mean, we have our Brazilian, our random Italian, which are Italians white? I think they're white. But anyway.
The color now.
Yeah, we got a couple Hispanics.
Yes,
yeah, it is. Mexican here and there. But anyhow, a crusty male by and large, you know, white by and large surfer who I think also has a real heart of gold. How do you break through? What do you say to that person to say, come join the revolution? Help me.
I think that's the important thing to remember with gender equality in sport is that what we are proposing in having sport spaces, surfing spaces more gender inclusive is not to take anything away from anyone, but it is to provide opportunity for it to grow in a different and unique way. So, for example, the petition that I am currently trying to get signatures for that you should also all go and sign we want to make gender equity a condition of government funding for sports clubs in New South Wales. So if a board riders club applies for funding from the state government, they need to show that they support women and girls, in they have gender equal policies within their club. And I think that we wouldn't be doing it if we didn't believe that people can do that easily and show it, that people running board riders clubs are smart enough to know how to do it and to easily be able to fulfill that. But it also, it provides new opportunities for things like sponsorship. So like companies like Tom's sanitary items, they support Nikki Van Dyke, who's a surfer, and they would never sponsor a board riders club that is not gender inclusive. So you lose a whole brand, like you lose a whole section of brands or companies that could potentially fund a board riders club by not being gender inclusive. So if you are gender inclusive, then you have these we have more opportunities for money to come in. And that's positive growth for our sport. And that's positive, like, support for what is what has been coined the heart and soul of surfing in Australia. So I don't know if that's a quite a wordy technical way of explaining it, but in the end, it comes, in my mind, it comes down to that, Derek, you have sons and a daughter, that if they're playing sport together or in their respective teams as kids, and they have dreams of growing up to be pro athletes, you have to find, as a parent, you have to find a way to tell your daughter that she should probably get another job. She'd probably have to get another career, because for doing the exact same thing, she's going to get paid not enough to live on. Whereas your son can probably do it as his career and maybe make a lot of money. So
I tell my daughter's a model.
Yeah, female models do much better than male models. And
they crush it. They crush it. Those male models get stomped on their necks.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think that to me, it's like, that's what it's about. That's what, like, the revolution is basically my revolution at the moment anyway, is basically trying to help kids have equal chance, equal pathway through sport, and that they, that 10-year-old girls can play footy and go on and be professional footy players if they want to. And at the moment they can't really. So, yeah, I think that's in my mind, that's a simple way of looking at it, that you should be able to tell your kids, no matter what gender they are, that they can chase their dreams and make careers out of the things that they love to do, the sports that they love to play.
Thanks, Lucy.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
That was beautiful. Thanks for coming.
Yeah. And just quickly, how do people sign a petition?
You can head to equalpayforequalplay.com.au and you can sign the petition. There's a little button, you just click it and there's the petition, and you just put your name in and then it's signed, and we need 20,000 signatures to get it tabled in Parliament, where it has to be debated if you have that many signatures.
Do you have to be Australian to sign?
You actually technically have to be a resident of New South Wales. I'm not going to advocate for any kind of misleading information entry, but they don't ask for your address. So if you believe in the cause, I think you can support it.
That's good. I feel like a climate change, Chess can feel like climate change scientists signing it. You know, those
sure can.
That's signing that too. Yes.
But yeah, probably Australian is good. Australian at the minimum would be good.
Chess sent me sure. I'm Australian. I'm signing. I'm in. All right. Thanks, Lucy.
Thanks, Lucy.
Bye. If you're into sports betting, BetOnline is where you should go to win money today. Whether it's live bets, during games, or futures for who you think will win the championship, BetOnline has all the latest odds, news, and information for all your online sports betting needs. Chaz, do you throw your money away betting?
I wish I could more easily. This is the problem, is I'm always looking for somewhere easy to throw my money away sports betting, because I always think that I've got a sure lock on a game, and nothing feels better than knowing you have a sure lock and throwing money down, right? I mean, yeah. How often do you sports bet?
I jump on the surfing occasion. I always lose because I can't ignore long odds. I see long odds and I just see ding, ding, ding.
But the whole point of betting is long odds, right? Like, who wants to ever go, like, playing the book to me is the most insane part about gambling, because ain't gambling, I got a gut feeling on something, even from anything, right? I mean, most sports betting, but even let's bring it all the way back to blackjack, is sitting and playing the book where you're at the table and you know, okay, I'm holding a 17, but ooh, I got a gut that a four is coming up, and you know that everyone at the table hates you when you say hit me, because you're not supposed to do that. But I don't understand anyone hating on anyone taking the longest odds in any time.
The blackjack example is perfect, because you have these people playing a game that's designed for them to lose, and yet they play that thing where you don't draw on 14 or
above. No, you play the book. That's all you do is play the book.
And then the people get furious.
And you see how mad do people get in front of you when somebody else would not play the book?
And I used to sit and go, "You guys are idiots." And then quite often you pull out your 10, your 4, your 3, your 2, your 3, whatever, and get 21. If someone had been pulling all those shortcuts, the only way it works is if you can card count.
I mean, card count and or got a sweet gut feeling, which is sports betting is all about.
What's it feel like? Tell me what it feels like. Tell me that gut.
I mean, when you just have that tingle in your gut, when you know, I mean, for example, I was in Italy not too long ago, knew full well Italy was going to take the Euro Cup. I knew they were going to beat England. I just knew it. And if I had a nice app that I could have easily bet or a nice website that I knew I could have bet, I would have full on thrown down. It's just, I never know where to go in this instance.
Well, now you know. So visit the website today or use your mobile device to join and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. So before your next big game, head on over to BetOnline and start playing today. BetOnline, the online sportsbook experts, and it's betonline.ag. Very important.
So wait, betonline.sportsag.
No, BetOnline, B-E-T-O-O, whatever, .ag. So it's Antigua.
That's it. You don't even need a .com.
BetOnline.ag. Come visit beautiful Antigua and Barbuda.
I mean, who doesn't want to bet in Antigua?
Women to Barbuda. We love your women.
Who doesn't? That's where I want to throw all my money away.
Welcome to Antigua. Tattooed on your dick, huh?
Making people's millions.
Thanks, Jazz. We done.
Perfect.
Jesus.
That's the one.
You're good. Good, man. Thanks for doing that.
Oh, no worries. But any of these dumb ads, we should just do, unless they have like want specific stuff.
Yeah,
we should just make them fun and funny because they actually become part of the show. People start liking the ads as much as anything else.
Yeah.
Dumb. Just a dumb podcast life.
HD, it's amazing. I'm just examining. I can see the fence. I can see the walls and the wood in the fence. It's lovely.
It's on my old shit phone. An old shit phone is so much better than an old shit computer, which is amazing. You'd think that the computer would have like guts to do stuff like this, but I think the phone, I've given up on the computer for any kind of online podcasting or anything.
Yeah, right.
I don't use it. I don't use a microphone. I don't use earphones. I don't use anything.
Yeah. And David has the beautiful setup.
David does
setup. Still haven't worked it out though.
Oh my goodness though! Like I don't know how. Yeah, like I'm in and out of David before he said. Like I come in right when he's finished setting up. I leave well before he starts tearing down. I think of the slog that dude throws in.
he's good value, lovely man.
Oh. Remember. Yep, right. David Lee Scales.
Thank you, Matt.
Oh, thank you.
Talk soon.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.